I have a lot of territory that I want to cover tonight. We're going to spend a good bit of time in the text, both in the Old Testament and in the Hebrew letter in the 11th chapter. So I hope that you'll be interested in the things that we're talking about tonight and give them the attention that they deserve as far as increasing our faith is concerned. In our studies thus far, we have noted that the book of Hebrews is a book of comparisons. In the first chapter, we see Christ compared with what? The Old Testament prophets, that's right. And then in the first chapter on into the second chapter, he's better than the angels. And in the third chapter, better than Moses. And then as we read in the fourth chapter, we see a warning. What is the warning? Let us what? That's right. Fear God and follow through with the promise. In the fourth chapter, beginning at verse 14, we see an instruction to draw near, but we see also the description of Jesus as the high priest. Having then a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. Then it identifies the nature of our high priest. We have one that is tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. And then in verse 16, we're instructed to draw near unto the throne of grace. In the fifth chapter, we see introduced the priesthood once again, or a follow-through of the priesthood of Christ, but we see an interruption in that discussion. In the 11th verse, following through the sixth chapter, what caused that disruption? All right, that's right. And then as we get back toward the end of the sixth chapter and on into the seventh chapter, we see a comparison of the priesthoods and showing that there is a new priesthood, not like that Old Testament Levitical priesthood. And then the theme of the eighth chapter is what? We have another comparison in the eighth chapter. What is it? The covenants. That's right. Old and new covenant. And then in the ninth chapter, we see a comparison of what? The tabernacle. That's right. That Old Testament tabernacle compared with the more perfect tabernacle. And then in the 10th chapter, what seems to be the theme of the 10th chapter? All right, better sacrifice. There is one sacrifice that takes away sin. Now in the 11th chapter, the theme is faith. That's right. The theme is faith. And we want to spend a bit of time, as we have talked about, the faith of Abel, the faith of Enoch, the faith of Noah, the faith of Abraham and Sarah. We've noted in verse 13 that these all died in faith, not having received the promises. We talked further about the faith of Abraham in that he offered up Isaac, the faith of Moses. And in our study this evening, we want to talk about, beginning at verse 32, the faith of such characters as Gideon, Barak, Samson, and so forth. These characters stand obviously in a looming light because they are considered as worthy characters to include in this 11th chapter that we refer to as the Great Hall of Faith. Now, we see first of all introduced, the writer says, "And what shall I say more? For the time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah of David, and Samuel and the prophets." And then he begins to elaborate on what some of these characters did. And so we want to begin and talk about Gideon. And that takes us back over to Judges, the 6th and the 7th chapters, as we read of the faith of Gideon. What was the circumstances that were taking place at the time that Gideon becomes a judge? What was occurring in Israel? Judges chapter 6 and 7. All right. This was a cycle that seems to reoccur during the period of the judges several times. And we notice that the people did evil in the sight of Jehovah, and Jehovah delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. How severe was this oppression? Ken?
Pretty bad.
It was so bad that the people hid in caves and holes in the earth for fear of the Midianites. The Midianites, the text tells us, came in as locusts for multitude. Now, what was God's plan and how was it accomplished that Gideon was able to free the Israelites from the oppression of the Midianites? What did God do?
Well, their army down to almost nothing.
All right.
And then they come down with the pictures and the lights.
All right.
And the other army, the Midianites, mainly they're killing themselves.
All right.
But he dwindled it down so that they would know that he's the one getting the victory.
All right, lest they should vaunt themselves up, we find in the 7th chapter and in verse 2. But Gideon is the one who told all those who were fearful to go home. Gideon was the one who selected his army from those who went down to the watering hole and selected them as to how they drank. And Gideon is the one, in verse 17, who said, "Look on me and do likewise." Gideon's faith is seen in his leadership. And it tells us in verse 21 that as a result of Gideon's leadership, that they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran, and they shouted and put them to flight. Now the plan of God worked because of the faith of Gideon to work the plan. And we see evidence of that in these few verses of the 6th and 7th chapters. Then the writer tells us of Barak. The story of Barak is found in Judges chapter 4 and 5. The song of Deborah, of course, in chapter 5. But we read of the faith of Barak in chapters 4 and 5. Deborah is described as a prophetess in verse 4. She, of course, is one of the She is one who is listed among the judges. But Barak, what did Barak do in Judges chapter 4? Now, these are characters, Old Testament characters, that are cited in Hebrews 11 as characters of faith. We ought to be familiar with what they did. What did Barak do?
Is that where he refused to go to war against Deborah and Judah?
Yes. He joined his forces with Deborah. And who did he deliver the Israelites from? Pardon me? Sisera? All right. S-I-S-E-R-A. Sisera and the Philistines. So Barak joined forces with Deborah and delivered the Israelites from the Philistines at Megiddo. So we see what Barak did. He had faith in God to lead his army with that of Deborah in opposition to the Philistines at Megiddo. And then in Judges chapter 13 through chapter 16, we read of the faith of Samson. Now sometimes when we read of Samson, we see only negative things. But we find that there are some positive things in the life of Samson, especially toward the end of his life. And what do we find regarding Samson that makes him such an outstanding character of faith toward the end of his life? What did he do? What did he ask? All right, Bruce?
He knocked down the pillars.
All right. Look, if you will, at verse 28. Judges chapter 16, verse 28. That's right. There's another thing that Samson did that we want to note, and that is in verse 14 and 15 of chapter 15. Did somebody mention that? He killed 1,000 of the Philistines with the jawbone of an ass. He was a great military leader. He delivered the people of God from the hand of the Philistines, and regarding the Philistines, when he pull down the pillars, how many did he kill then? Anyone? Well, if you'll back up in the text to verse 27, we notice that there were in that house, or in the roof of the house, about 3,000 men and women that beheld while Samson made sport. 3,000 in his death, 1,000 with the jawbone of an ass. He did that because he called upon God for strength. Samson finally understood that the source of his strength was not in his uncut hair, but the source of his strength was in God. And when he placed his trust, his faith, his confidence in God, God responded and gave him true strength. Also in the Judges, in the 11th chapter and into the 12th chapter, we read of the faith of Jephthah. What did Jephthah do? He delivered the Israelites from whom, Chris? Anyone? The Ammonites. That's right, from the Ammonites. And he subjected the Ephraimites. So Jephthah expressed faith in God. Of course, we remember Jephthah not always for his faith in God and his leading the army of Israel, but we think of his rash vow. And sometimes that becomes the focus of our attention on a negative thing, much like we think of Samson. But these men are listed as great men of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. And of course, in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer talks about not only the faith of Gideon, Samson, Jephthah, but he talks about David. What is so outstanding in the life of David? Well, he was appointed as a king. He served God with a true heart. In fact, we read that he was a man after God's own heart. In his service, he was not always faithful to God, but he always repented of his sin. And in Psalm 51, he said, "My sin is ever before me." He pointed out that against thee alone, O God, have I sinned. So David expressed great confidence and faith in God to be listed in the great hall of faith. Prophets like Samuel and the rest of the prophets, such as Elijah, Elisha, and Daniel, men who stand out because of their great faith. Now these men were challenged. Their challenge was not something that was an easy thing, often being challenged by an opposing army, often being challenged by their own ability to preserve self, such as Elijah when he fled and hid in a cave. And so these outstanding characters of faith, we ought to remember what they did. As you look further in this text of Hebrews chapter 11, we read of characters that subdued kingdoms. Can you think of someone who subdued a kingdom that would be an outstanding illustration of faith? Beginning early on in the history of Israel.
Moses, okay.
Moses has been listed already, but Moses subdued kingdoms, did he not? I was thinking of Joshua as he began to conquer the land of conquest and brought the children of Israel into the promised land, beginning with what city? The city of Jericho, okay? And then, of course, the city of Ai defeated the Israelites. But as we turn to the 8th chapter, we read of the conquest of Ai. We read of the Gibeonites and so forth. But if you'll drop over into the 11th chapter and read with me in verse 23, it tells us, "So Joshua took the whole land according to all that Jehovah spake unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land had rest from war." Joshua was told in Joshua chapter 1, in verses 2 through verse 6, that he would be the one to lead the children of Israel into the promised land. And God told him in verse 6 of chapter 1, "Be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt cause this people to inherit the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them." Now when they came to the city of Jericho, we know from Hebrews 11 that by faith the walls of Jericho fell. But what did Joshua lead the people of Israel to do to cause the walls to fall? All right, he obeyed what God said. All right, all of that was necessary in order for the walls to fall, and of course Joshua led them in the conquest of the city of Jericho. Other such characters as subdued kingdoms. David, as we've mentioned already, also was very successful in subduing kingdoms. If you'll turn in your Bibles to the text of 2 Samuel chapter 5. 2 Samuel chapter 5 and read beginning in verse 4 through verse 24. we see that David subdued kingdoms as he expanded the kingdom to its original dominion. 2 Samuel chapter 5, beginning in verse 4 through verse 25. I want to pass beyond that one and come over to chapter 8, where we read beginning at verse 3. Well, we could begin at verse 2, for that matter. Well, we could begin at verse 1. David smote the Philistines and subdued them. And then verse 2, he smote Moab. Verse 3, he smote also Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And he went and recovered his dominion at the river. And then at verse 5, he smote of the Syrians, 22,000. And then when Toai, king of Hamath, heard that David had smitten all the host of Hadadezer, then at verse 14, he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom put he garrisons. And all the Edomites became servants of David. So on and on, we read of the conquest of David over numerous surrounding nations. We also notice Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 4. Do you think Solomon would be an illustration of a great character of faith? 1 Kings chapter 4. And in verse 21, 1 Kings chapter 4, I'm in 2 Kings, no wonder that's not at the right place on the page. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 21, Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the river unto the land of the Philistines, and unto the border of Egypt, and they brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. So Solomon not only subdued kingdoms, but these kingdoms paid taxes to King Solomon. The text tells us all the days of his life. Solomon, David, Joshua, and others that we could read about subdued kingdoms. But as we turn back to Hebrews chapter 11, these great characters of faith wrought righteousness. David as a king in 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel chapter 8 in verse 15 is noted because of his righteousness. In fact, specific mention is made of David as it tells us that he reigned over all Israel and he executed justice and righteousness unto all his people. So David was known as a man of righteousness. David, or Samuel as a judge also exercised righteousness in 1 Samuel chapter 12 and in verse 4. And let's think for a moment about King Solomon. King Solomon's righteousness is seen in the notorious story of the two women who claimed the same child. Somebody want to tell me about what he did? That's right. All right, and all marvel at the great wisdom that Solomon had manifested. So Samuel, David, Solomon, and a host of others manifested righteousness. Notice the next little expression in Hebrews chapter 11, they obtained promises. Now that becomes significant to our study because in Hebrews chapter 11 we've just read of some who did not obtain promises. Verse 13 of Hebrews 11 tells us that these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth, etc., etc. But what we learn in this is some obtained no promises, some obtained some. Now in this list of characters that we're reading about in the 11th chapter in verse 13, some obtained promises. What promises did some obtain? You remember that God promised unto Abraham basically three promises, what we refer to as the land promise, the nation promise, and the seed promise. When we read of characters like Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, did these obtain any of those? Did they live to see the fulfillment of any of them? No, they did not. But yet when we read of characters like Joshua, when we read of characters like Gideon, or Barak, or Samson, or Jephthah, or these characters that are listed in the 32nd verse, they obtained promises. What promises did they see the fulfillment of?
Promises of
the nation and the land. They got to be a part of that great nation. In fact, in Exodus chapter 19 and in verses 5 and 6, God referred to His people as a holy nation. And then, of course, Joshua, through his leadership, brought them into the promised land. And in Joshua chapter 21, I believe it's verses, let me look right quick, 43 and 44 and 45. So Jehovah gave unto Israel all the land which He sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And Jehovah gave them rest round about according to all that He sware unto their fathers. And there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. Jehovah delivered all their enemies into their hand. There failed not aught of any good thing which Jehovah had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. The promise of the land was fulfilled during Joshua's day, as we saw in Joshua chapter 11. And then the remaining chapters of Joshua, for the most part, addresses the distribution of the land among the tribes. Yes, David?
Speaking of Joshua, we remembered a few minutes ago, one of the test faces, like I said, believing God, really believing who other than Joshua, or who of us today would have marched around Jericho a number of times and blew a trumpet, expecting the city to fall.
It would seem so foolish, but Joshua believed what God said.
And that's the point. Sometimes God said a lot of things that to a lot of people may have seemed really foolish, but for many people, believed what God said.
That's right. Joshua believed God and led the people around the city. That's right, Joshua and Caleb.
Yeah,
That's right. Yes. No doubt. What are these people going to do? Destroy our city by marching around it? No doubt that's what they thought, but that's what happened.
You know, when you read the Old Text, they did fear it because they had heard what had happened with Egypt, which was one of the greatest nations on earth at that time, and how they defeated them, so they might be thinking, looking for them again.
Yeah, Rahab had heard. And of course we read of the great faith of Rahab in that she hid the spies. She had heard of the greatness of the God of the Israelites. So they obtained promises. They obtained the land promise. They were a part of this great nation. And as we turn back to the text, it tells us they stopped the mouths of lions. Who comes to mind? Daniel. In the lion's den, in Daniel chapter 6, stopped the mouths of lions. Of course, God quenched stopped their mouths, but it was because of the great faith that Daniel had. And of course, the next expression, quenched the violence of fire. Who comes to mind? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. I want us to look in Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, beginning at verse 16. No, let's begin at verse 13. Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said unto them, Is it of purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that ye serve not my God, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Notice the response in verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Of course, Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, ordered that the furnace be made hotter than it had ever been made before, and that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cast into the midst of the furnace. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were of the mind, even if God does not deliver us, we will not bow down and worship the image that you have set up. They expressed faith in God when they said, He is able to deliver us. Our God is able to do that. Their confidence in the God of their people rather than these heathen gods is overwhelmingly clear. Any question or comment just here? Well, not only do we read about the characters of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who quenched the power of fire, but there are those who escaped the edge of the sword. Can you offer an illustration of anyone who did that? David did when he escaped the sword of King Saul. That's right. And we can read about that in 1 Samuel 23, verses 19 through 29. Can you think of anyone else that becomes an illustration? Well, that's right. But it was not because of Saul's faith. He was asleep at the time. What we know is of others such as the prophet Elijah. Remember when Jezebel said, by tomorrow at this time your life shall be as one of theirs, as Elijah had ordered that the 250 prophets be slain with the sword. And so Jezebel was seeking the life of Elijah. And then Elisha, the king of Israel, wanted him murdered in 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 31 and 32. And the list could go on, others who have escaped the edge of the sword. Out of weakness was made strong. What characters come to mind? David? Okay, what happened with David?
David and Goliath.
David and Goliath, that's right. David and Goliath was a little bitty fella in comparison to the great big Philistine. But even though he was small, he was made strong by the power of God. That's right. He defeated Goliath, the Philistine. Any other illustrations? There are several that you might add to the list. Yes, Jenny?
Well, there's Elijah when he went up against the prophets of Baal.
All right.
One little guy up against 250 people with all the followers behind them. You're looking pretty weak there, but...
Yeah. But he was made strong. David?
Moses, Joseph, a lot of these. You had Moses and Joseph, both of the Jewish nation, which was slaves, a slave nation, but now they became rulers.
Right.
Moses could have been a ruler of Egypt, but he was still a leader of the Israelites. But Joseph ended up being a ruler of Egypt,
So
you had people like that, but not... worldly standards were not in the right position to be such, but because of God, they were.
All right. They were elevated to a position of influence and power. What about Samson? We've just talked about Samson and how
Gideon.
Did he... Pardon me?
Gideon also.
Gideon, yes.
What about Jonathan and his
Yeah. Impressive, isn't it? Out of weakness, we're made strong. What about Hezekiah? Chris?
It also reminds me of, I'm sure the Hebrew writer maybe isn't referencing this, but Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, he had prayed for his thorn in the flesh, and God had told him, my power is effective.
That's right. And so there's a host of characters, some New Testament characters, that could be cited to illustrate the point. That serve to help us to understand characters of faith. I'm impressed with Hezekiah, who was told that his life would be ended and that he was to set his house in order. He was sick, nigh unto death, and he began to beseech the Lord. And how long was his life extended? 15 more years. So here's a man that was weak, but in his weakness he was made strong. His life was extended. And in the next expression, we read about men who waxed mighty in war, who turned to flight the armies of aliens, that is, those who were not Israelites. And we read of great characters of faith who did that. Again, we mention Hezekiah, whose faith had caused the slaughter of 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. And that story fascinates me. You remember how that Rabshakeh, the captain of the army of Sennacherib, the Assyrian king, came upon the city of Jerusalem, where Hezekiah was serving as king, and ordered Hezekiah to surrender. And Hezekiah said, this is a loose paraphrase, I won't do it. And the captain of the army, Rabshakeh, reminded Hezekiah of all of the other nations that had either surrendered or been defeated, that their gods were not able to deliver them, and even called upon the people who were upon the walls of the city of Jerusalem to have a talk with Hezekiah. He's going to get you all killed because their gods were not able to deliver them, and you think your God is able to deliver you. And in essence, what did Hezekiah tell Sennacherib to do?
Bring it on.
No, he told him go home. He told him go home. Because when you get home, your sons are going to kill you. And so Sennacherib woke up in the morning to find 185,000 of his soldiers dead, and he went home. And guess what happened when he got home? His sons killed him. So here's a man that in weakness was made strong. Hezekiah, it appeared that he was going to be defeated, but he was not defeated. In fact, he expressed faith in God, and his faith responded in the deliverance of the people of Israel, or of Judah, from Sennacherib and his army. Somebody mentioned a few moments ago David and Goliath. He was a valiant man who turned to flight the army of the Philistines as he fought with Goliath. And he said, my God will deliver you, that is, Goliath, into my hands. And so it was. We think of Jehoshaphat in defeating the Moabites and the Ammonites in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 1 through 30, another very fascinating story. In the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, once again, we read in verse 35 of women who received their dead by resurrection and others who were tortured, not accepting their deliverance. Women who received their dead by resurrection. Can you cite for me a couple of examples? Yes, sir. Both of those. Yes, both of those become outstanding characters to illustrate our point. In 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 17 through 24, and in 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 8 through verse 37. The widow of Zarephath, can you tell me the story of what happened with her? Times were hard, and what did she have? All right, a little meal and a little oil. And the prophet told her to do what? Make me a cake. And how did she respond? It's all I have. Then we'll die. But did she make it for the prophet? And what happened to the oil and the meal? It increased. It never ran out. And then what happened to her son? All right, he died. And what did the prophet Elijah do to restore the son? Raised him from the dead. He laid himself on the body of the son and cried out to God, and God raised him from the dead. Here we see the great faith of Elijah the prophet, the Shunammite woman. What happened with her? 2 Kings chapter 4. All right, and then All right. That's right. So Elisha brought him back and restored life to him by the power of God. We've noted that others were tortured, not accepting their deliverance to obtain a better resurrection. I think last Wednesday, we were doing some reading from this history book that's known as Second Maccabees. And it's a history of the Jews, and it's written to help us, I think, to understand what men of faith did. And I think that when we read in the text of Hebrews 11 about some being tortured, not accepting deliverance, no doubt we're talking about some of these characters that lived during the intertestamental period, during the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. And in our Wednesday night study some time ago, studying the book of Daniel, we've talked about some of the corrupt things that Antiochus Epiphanes did to those who would not subject themselves unto his rule. One, whose name is Eleazar, one of the chief of the scribes, a man advanced in years. He was about 90 years old, been faithful to God all his life. But now we find that he's being challenged to eat pork by Antiochus Epiphanes. And the man will not eat pork. It was against the law of the dietary diet of the dietary law of the Hebrews not to eat pork. And he chose even to suffer death rather than to eat pork. Some of his compadres began to tell him and tried to force pork into his mouth, so it would appear that he had complied with the commandment of the king and his life would be spared. But Eleazar said, "No, I won't do that." He spit out the pork. And here's what he said. It says, "But when he was now ready to die with stripes, he groaned and said, 'O Lord, who hast the holy knowledge, thou knowest manifestly that whereas I might be delivered from death, I suffer grievous pains in body, but in soul am well content to suffer these things because I fear thee.' Thus did this man die, leaving not only the young men, but also the whole nation, the memory of his death for an example of virtue and fortitude." He was willing to suffer execution because of his faith. He feared God. Now, in our last meeting last Wednesday night, studying from some of these things, I noted the seven brothers from 2 Maccabees chapter 7. What was done to all seven of these brothers and then to their mother? And don't tell me they were executed. I know that. What was done to them?
Cut out their tongues, cut off all their limbs, and
yeah, they were tortured. They were tortured. And in each instant, we find that they express great faith in God rather than to compromise their convictions. In verse 9, one said, when he was at the last gasp, he thus said, "Thou indeed, O most wicked man, destroyest us out of the presence of life. But the King of the world will raise us up, who die for his laws in the resurrection of eternal life." Now that expressed the confidence that all seven of these had, and we could take the time to read what all seven of them and even what their mother had to say as they faced death or execution. But it illustrates for us how that they were willing to suffer torture because of their faith. And then returning to Hebrews the 11th chapter, we note that others suffered trial and mocking, scourgings and chains and imprisonment. Can you think of any characters who suffered these kind of things? There are several. Jeremiah. Yes, Jeremiah the prophet in Jeremiah chapter 37, in verses 11 through verse 21. Jeremiah was imprisoned because of his faith. And so we find in Jeremiah 20, Jeremiah 38, several passages that illustrate the case with Jeremiah. How that he was imprisoned because of his faith. Anyone else? Zechariah, Daniel, all right? Isaiah. Well, we're going to hold off and talk about Isaiah. Isaiah, I think, illustrates one of these other characteristics, perhaps more than anyone we could identify. Micaiah. You remember how that Ahab said, "I don't like Micaiah because he never says anything good about me." What happened to Micaiah the prophet? Well, let's turn to it and read it. 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 24 through 28. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 24 beginning. Randy, you mind to read some for me, 24 and 25?
You said 1 Kings 22.
1 Kings 22, yes, verse 24 through 28 it is.
Zedekiah the son of Shemaiah, came near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, "How did the Spirit of the Lord pass from me to speak to you?" Micaiah said, "Behold, you shall see on that day when you enter an inner room to hide yourself." Then the king of Israel said, "Take Micaiah and return him to Amon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, 'Thus says the king, put this man in prison and feed him sparingly with bread and water until I return safely.' Micaiah said, 'If you indeed return safely, the Lord has not spoken by me.' And he said, 'Listen, all you people.'"
Isn't that something? In other words, you ain't going to return. All right, David?
It doesn't mention your name, but in Jeremiah 2, it talks about Judah killing their own prophets by the sword, by their own sword.
So yeah.
We don't exactly who they're mentioning there.
Yeah.
Prophets, which is plural, they were killed by the sword.
Yeah.
Not counting one that were then killed by foreign countries. This was from Judah's own.
Yeah. Isn't that something? And then those who were stoned, Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, and in verses 20 through 22, was stoned. And then, Ken, you mentioned Isaiah. Sawn in two. The prophet Isaiah, according to Jewish history, was sawn in half during the reign of Manasseh, king of Israel. And then those who were tempted. That seems to be a mild word in this listing of horrible things that those of faith suffered. But those who were tempted, we think maybe of Daniel as a youth in Daniel chapter 1, who was tempted to eat of the king's dainties. And you can add to that list others offered life, wealth, and honor if they would only obey the commands of the king. And then those who were slain with the sword, Uriah the prophet, Jeremiah chapter 20, chapter 26, verses 20 through 23, and you could add to that list as well. Some wandered about in sheepskins, in goatskins. Can you think of an illustration of a man who did that? Elijah. That's right. Being destitute, afflicted, and tormented, again, Elijah, the prophet. So there are a number of characters that are set forth in these verses as great characters of faith. Now, let's go back to the text of Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 38, it says, "Of whom the world was not worthy, wanderers in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the earth. And these all, having had witness borne to them through their faith, received not the promise." As we read of these whose life was not worthy of the praise of this world, many had to wander in deserts and mountains, live in dens in the caves of the earth. And we've mentioned Elijah as an illustration of that. But in truth, the world was not worthy of them. The lives that they lived were lives of continued obedience unto the Lord. And as a result, the world was not worthy of them. They obtained a good testimony, verse 39 tells us. They have had witness borne to them of their faith. Who bore witness of their faith? God did. That's right. And that in itself is a great commendable thing that we want to take notice of. As stated earlier regarding the elders in chapter 11, verse 2, "For therein the elders had witness borne to them." Stated regarding Enoch in verse 5, "By faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and he was not found because God translated him, for he had had witness borne to him that before his translation he had been well pleasing to God." These great characters of faith, to note that God took recognition of them, that's something. God knew who they were. He knew the great things that they did and was impressed by the faith that they demonstrated. Now, as we read about all of these great characters of faith, we want to be impressed with the statement in verse 39. It says, these received not the promise. The seed promise. That's right. When we read of those who obtained promises, they were part of the great nation. They lived in the land. But all of these Old Testament worthies, as great as they were, received not the promise. That is, the promise of the coming of the Messiah and the blessings that He had to offer. They all died before the promised Deliverer came. Nor did they experience the perfection that Christ offers. Look at verse 40. It tells us that God, having provided some better thing concerning us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. Now, one of the things that we've noticed in our Hebrew study is this word perfection. We've seen it over and over again. We saw it in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, in verse 1, where it says, "For the law, having a shadow of the good things to come, not the very image of the things, can never with the same sacrifices year by year, which they offer continually, make perfect them that draw nigh." We saw it in the 7th chapter, in the 9th chapter, as well as in the 10th chapter in verse 14. This idea of perfection meant what?
Complete.
That's right, complete. Now these Old Testament worthies, the Hebrew writer tells us, that God has provided some better thing concerning us. What do we enjoy that they did not have? The seed promise. They could only look forward to it, anticipating what it would mean to them and to others. We can look back to its fulfillment. Now, regarding the seed promise, the writer says that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. In other words, we shall be made perfect with them. But as we turn back to the 9th chapter and read in verse 15, we see what the death of Christ would do, not only for us, but also for them. It says, "And for this cause He is the mediator of a new covenant, that a death having taken place for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first covenant, they that have been called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance." What did they benefit from? What could they look forward to? The blessings that were offered through Christ. Forgiveness. That's right. They could look forward to this. The law could never do that for them. But Christ can. He can. What they did not receive during their lifetime, they did receive with the coming of Christ. For Christ died to redeem them as well as us. Verse 15. Yes, Randy?
The promise of the seed promise of Christ, by extension, isn't that the same as the promise of eternal life that we're given the gift of the Holy Spirit through forgiveness of sins? I mean, isn't that the same promise?
Yes. In verse 39 of Acts chapter 2, he says, "For to you is the promise, and to your children, and to all that are far off, even as many as the Lord our God shall call unto Him." I think that's parallel with the quotation of Peter from Joel 2 in Acts 2 verse 21, when he said, "Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." So, shall be saved, eternal life, forgiveness of sins, all of these become equivalent terms in reference to the promise. The seed promise, yes.
It's not just the coming of Christ.
Oh, no. No, it's the blessings that are afforded us in Christ. That's right. That's right. Because He died. Yes, Jenny?
I was thinking about the wording of the end of verse 40 where it says that they should not be made perfect apart from us. And it sort of threw me for a loop in the beginning because we're not what makes them perfect.
No. That's right. That's a good analogy because that's basically the picture that's presented as we begin the 12th chapter. Okay? The great arena and all of those great characters of faith, and you look toward the end. Okay? We'll talk about chapter 12 next time.